Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Money means different things to different people. Most people don't think too deeply about it because it is so embedded in our daily lives that we take it for granted as a fact of nature. You know, it just has existed for a long time and will continue to exist. And it powers, it's a bloodstream, it's a blood of the whole economy. If you think of like a circulatory system, what blood is to the whole body. So money and money flows are like that. And so it's always present underneath every transaction and every grouping, but rarely dissected very deeply. So if you talk about money, I believe that money is one of the first technologies of human civilization. And way before there was written history, there was money. And in fact, the first writings that discovered, the Egyptian hieroglyphics that were discovered, do deal with a lot of money stuff, because it was an accounting and entry system, you know, that was being used. So that shows you how ancient money is. It's more ancient than what most people think. So what was the necessity for money? What was the reason for it? Okay, if we think about it. So, you know, we have, let's take a simple example on a deserted island where a few people are there and they have division of labor come through, right? That arises automatically. Maybe somebody is good with fishing. Somebody is good with tending to a garden and growing some vegetables. Somebody builds a shelter, a hut, some kind of dwelling, and somebody builds a boat maybe. So if different people are engaged in different activities, but as human beings, we need a lot more stuff for our daily lives, right? We need to eat, we need to have some kind of shelter, we need to drink water or something else, and then entertainment and, you know, all that stuff. So if you see, there are many activities and many goods produced as a result of these activities. And so when we produce these goods, there's enough for ourselves and there's surplus generally. And since we want to specialize and we keep doing and producing what we're producing and others are doing the same thing, so there will come a time where we need to barter, right? We need to exchange goods because we can only specialize so much in so many things, in one or two things. So we need the goods produced by other people as a result of their specializing. So that was a barter system. But barter system is so complex because you need to find the right match. And if I produce a goods A, and somebody else produces B, and the person who's producing B doesn't need my goods, but I need B's. So I need to find a match. I need to find a C who takes my goods A and gives me C, and hopefully B like C, so I exchange it. So you see how complex it gets, even if we go to three or four transactions.
I want bananas, you have potatoes. That guy wants potatoes, but he wants strawberries.
Right. And so market making is so complex because we need to constantly go out there and buy stuff that other people might need and anticipate. So curiously, when metals were discovered, when the metal civilization, so before metals, there were other things, tokens used, or something that's rare, something that everybody wants. So the first characteristic of something that emerges as a currency or money is a coveted goods that everybody wants. So if everybody says that I like metals for their ornamental value, things we can make, usability, all that stuff. So naturally, metals emerge in the market as coveted goods that are more, that are always in demand. So that's first criteria. So that's how metals came into being. And soon enough, everybody knows that people will take metal at any given time, some metal, right? So that particular metal becomes money. So that's the origins of money, just to give a very simple view of how money came to be. So in essence, the goods that become money have to be in demand by everybody at any given point in time. So everybody will accept it. So as time goes on, the network effects get set in and everybody knows they can accept a certain metal, say gold, silver, there were many competing metals, iron, whatever it was. But then we are safe in taking those metals as a payment for our goods, because we know when we want something else from somebody, and they will be more than happy to take our metal in exchange. So naturally, as a result of the market, some metals become money, and it's divisible, it's fungible, durable. It has to last for a long time. That means it has to be easy economy of storage, right? You have to be able to store it without too much of pain. You have to be able to secure it well enough so that you can claim possession to the metal, and a fast you can lay a claim to it, that if you have it in your house, you have it, and it should not take up too much of space. So there are many characteristics like this that metals have, and over time, some metals, we call them precious metals, become precious for that reason, because precious is a criteria, right? It's a characteristic. So precious to whom? For everybody. So that's how money came to be.
And not only that, I think there's actually a term, right? The way barter transitioned over, they call it coincidences, double coincidences. That means I want something that you have and you want something that I have, and then we can exchange.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all that happened, if there was a series of double coincidences throughout the day, it would have been very nice. But
yes,
because double coincidences are happening so rarely, we needed some way of saying, yeah, I know you want strawberries. I don't have them, but I'll give you these green dollar bills instead. And trust me, that guy will take the green dollar bills and give you strawberries.
Correct. That's a great way to put it, you know. So it's a very simple to understand once we go to the fundamentals. So you're right. That's how it came to be. And so the original money currency was precious metals. And then the coinage came later, right? And then the state came into, or the controlling authority in that tribe, that society. And today, this is nation state. We call it the state, the governments. So long before money was legislated, money was in demand, and it arose as a market need. So the point I want to make is legislation did not give power to money. The law of the land did not give power to money. Money arose and the law of the land recognized it. So there's a recognition. Just much like rights, the concept of rights for a man, rights are inherent in your existence as a human being. And they are not granted by society. They are recognized by society and recognized by civilized governments anyway. So it's very much parallel to that. So money came to be, and then money was recognized by the state. I want to make that point.
Yeah. So I think that's a very important point. I think what we have to do, Chuck, is along this discussion, we want to identify some key elements of what is money. I mean, because when you really think about it, money is only money because you and I agree that it is money. It's a common story that you and I agree on, and hopefully enough other people agree on it, and therefore it is a dollar bill. If it is an Indian rupee called INR or a US dollar, those are famous or popular or valuable only because you and I agreed that they are, right?
Right.
And one of the best ways of making sure everybody uses US dollar bill was to give it a very strong use case. And what is the obvious use case that the governments can come up with? Hey, you're going to pay your taxes in US dollars. So now everybody has to pay taxes. So everybody needs dollars to pay taxes. So that's a good way of making sure everybody has US dollars.
Yes. And I'll step back, a couple of steps back, and how that came to be. So because there are a couple of more steps between that and the precious metals, the coinage that emerged in the marketplace, recognized by the central authority, the tribe, the Politburo, the state, the government, whatever you call it, right? The chiefs, you know. So there was something else. There are a couple of steps in between, because belief that everybody will use it doesn't come like that. It comes through a series of steps. So we cannot dictate that, okay, I will release some kind of a coin or a token, and if I get enough people to believe it, and it'll become money. So that's what most people take that view. But I want to just dig deeper into that, okay? A little bit for a second. Let's pause and take it back. It's more complex than that. It's more complex because belief is a word I've seen a lot of people use, educated people use, circular belief or whatever they call it in this note, dollar bill of the or any other currency. However, let's go back to our precious metals, right? So the coinage emerged in the market. And so this was a metal that was in demand always. And the demand is not a belief. It's a real demand. Right? Belief can be subjective. Demand is objective. It's there is a need for that, right? And so people started, and the fact that it other people are demanding it also increases the demand is secondary. But people have to first have an attraction to it, this coin, right? And and then it helps that other people are also excited about it and attracted to it, and they will accept it. So that's secondary. So money arose in the marketplace not by a belief imposed, or everybody started getting together one day and everybody said, okay, going forward, we'll recognize this paper as our this thing, and that's all we stick to. It's more complex than that. It doesn't come in like that. So there was a precious metals, the coinage, state recognizes it. And that was it for a long time. And we know that the coin itself, the metal itself, is in demand by all of us, right? So, and then there was an innovation that was the exchange to the paper, right? The certificate, the first paper money were certificates. It was certificates of deposit. So there was, let's say there's an institution, let's call it a bank, okay, that people trust that if you put your metal here and they're not going to run away, that means they have been in business for generations. And they're pretty stable. Maybe you know their families. Everybody knows them. People can vouch for their integrity. So people went and deposited these coins with this institution, a bank, we call it. And the bank, in turn, issued a paper certifying that this paper represents this much of coinage that I'm holding. Okay, let's say gold coin. You went and deposited 1 kilogram of gold. And so the bank, the institution, gives you a certificate saying that this person has this gold deposited here, and this paper is redeemable at any time on demand to be converted back into gold when you come and present this paper. So now this paper is fungible. I'm not going to question where this paper came from, and the position of the paper is ownership, right? So when I go out in the market, so I deposit my gold, 1 kilogram, and I ask for a paper, a certificate saying 1 kilogram of gold, or I can ask for 10 certificates saying 100 grams of gold times 10. Okay, 10, and they're all exchangeable, fungible, divisible. So I take these 10 papers in the market. I might use two of these papers, that is 200 grams to buy something, two more to buy something else, one more to buy something else, right? And those people in turn now possess this paper, but the paper is a demand on the coinage that's held in this institution. So anybody that holds a paper and comes through the gates of this institution and demands the metal to be paid back will be paid back. That was the original promise. So banking and money are related. So that's how paper came. So that's how paper came to have value. It has value not because everybody just believed in it. It has value because everybody knew it's backed up and on demand, exchangeable to a precious metal. We also demand that, we know there's a demand for it, that we all would demand, right? So that was it. So, and then people forgot about their deposit because the paper was convenient and they can put it in the pocket, go around. It's easy to possess, easy to store. Of course, the downside is it can be destroyed very easily, more than gold, right? It can be stolen easily or taken possession of easily by other people. But you also can, you can also convert that same things into advantages. You can store it in less space and things like that. So there's a trade-off, but then people became comfortable enough with paper. And if you see the US, there were many currencies, right, private currencies in circulation, and they were all exchangeable. There was a rate in the market for each currencies for exchanging. So there was an exchange market, forex market, okay, foreign exchange market, because remember the states were entities and each state was foreign to another state, right? So that's how it came to be. Then came our central banking. Alexander Hamilton, one of the founding fathers of the US, was the architect of our central banking system as a treasury secretary, and centralized it, but still the government let it be for a long time till the Federal Reserve. And so the market dictated how much the dollar will be and what it's worth. So governments did not seriously get into money and the current system we have until the beginning of the 20th century. 1913 was the Federal Reserve Act. In the US, it was the beginning of government's control on this token, right? This token that called US dollar. And over time, US being having an amazing production of goods and become supplier of these goods around the world, the dollar became the de facto standard naturally. So that's how dollar came to be. So the reason he went through all this stuff is because the paper came to be accepted, not because of let the paper be accepted. That's a belief that everybody got together one day and decided to believe it all together. But it came to be in circulation and in demand and as a usage. It came into usage through a series of steps. And one of the important steps was deposit banking and how banks came to be to issue the paper. And then governments then recognized this paper, centralized it, and make it one unified currency in the US. That's how US dollar came to be and the current financial system to be.
So, you know, Chuck, I also remember that the original banks were not banks of cash. They were banks of grain.
Correct.
So, and all these certificates, it's hilarious when you think about it. So I'm telling you, hey, I have 100 pounds of grain. And oh, by the way, I want your sheep. So I'll give you a bag of grain. By the way, let me write you a letter and I'll sign it. Here, take it. If you take this to the bank, they'll recognize my signature. They'll give you one bag of grain from there. So that was the origin of some kind of an asset. The piece of paper was kind of asset backed in some sense. And then came paper. I think it came in China, where paper money was first issued in China, probably 1,000 years ago or something like that. So they, in the beginning, these paper monies were backed by actual physical assets. And then we have seen, if you see US itself, you know, it turned out that over time, people started believing so much in the green piece of paper that they forgot. You use the word forgot, and I found that interesting. So people forgot that, I'm actually supposed to take this to the bank and actually can get a piece of gold, or at least know that there's a piece of gold backing this up. Over time, you know, I know there's a piece of gold, you know there's a piece of gold, just take this piece of paper and then you keep passing it on. So there was a matter of convenience, and then there was a decoupling, you know, just like they say, after several generations of doing something, people have completely forgotten the origin of why we do it. So something like that happened, and there is this detachment of what is the asset that is backing this up. So we'll just use this paper. These people now has inherent value because the story is so strong that we don't need the backing of gold. So gold as a standard was decoupled and finally done away with. So we literally have worthless of pieces of paper in terms of physical value suddenly being considered to be extremely valuable. So I thought that was interesting when you use the word they forgot about it.
Yes, I like it actually, forgot about it. Because economic activity increased and there were many, many goods and produced. Okay, in the beginning it was goods, yeah, some services. But there are many goods and services, GNS, let's say, being produced in the marketplace, that there was just simply no time and to get back your gold because there were so many items and goods that you covet and you want. So it became more convenient to just keep holding this paper, this certificate of claim, right, on the asset, rather than going every time and checking your asset or whatever. So you know it was there. It's there lying secure.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.